window behind me. There were five or six drunks by the sound of it, close by the back wall of this low wing of the palace where the lights of Ganymede's party did not reach.
That's right. We're all gonna have a turn, though whether we take turns getting a blow or kicking the shit out of you astroturds is your choice.
The chefs around me froze, none wanting to acknowledge the atrocity transpiring below. Such things are supposed to be extinct in our enlightened age, but if civilization continues another millennium, another 10, drunk people will never become less stupid.
We're going to walk away now,
said a second victim, sober, if afraid. Think where we are and how fast security will jaunt in if something happens. You can walk away, too.
Joder la policía!
You try to get away, and we'll ditch your trackers in the trash and haul you up them hunting grounds. Nobody will find you out there, not for days. Now down on your knees and suck it, you bitch, before I go Mycroft Cano on your ass. By now, you are urging me to intervene. I did. But in return, we sacrifice listening to the rest of the party upstairs. All I know is that Perry consented. I leapt out the open window, and a controlled swing from the scalloped railing landed me in the gravel between the marauders and their prey. My fall was almost silent, and I landed on all fours like an animal, so with my dappled uniform of gray and beige, I must have seemed like a beast.
¡Carajo! ¿Qué es esto?
The attackers shrieked, though their panic faded fast.
It's just a servicer.
I rose, neither threatening nor shying back, just set to spring. These two were summoned by the Emperor himself. Shall I call Caesar, or would you prefer I call Police Commissioner General Hector Papadilius? I could see the aggressors now, five humanists, their jackets bright with sailor stripes and sport team patches, reeking from a long day's revels. We watched each other silently, as stags face off across a clearing, debating with eyes alone whether or not to break the woodland peace with war.
It's not worth it, their leader judged, a sinewy young thing who probably deserved the champion colors on his wrestler's cap. Come on, let's go get seats for the fireworks.
In my place, reader, would you have offered your silent thanks to chance or God?
Are you injured?
I asked as I turned to the pair behind me.
Untouched, thanks, Mycroft.
In the darkness of the alley, the long contours of their utopian coats glowed timidly, like ghosts threatening to vanish if I glanced away. Confess, reader. You too rush to the window to see when they walk by and point them out to eager friends.
Look at the utopian.
Do I assume too much? Perhaps you have never seen one. You may not be my contemporary, but a distant biographer, culling my faded history for data on one of our great men. Utopians are common now, but by history standards they must be ephemeral. Winged ants, born to pioneer new colonies, who cannot linger long among the workers. How shall I describe these aliens of the past to one whose world is no longer so colorful? Their coats were more than hive markers. They were windows to another world. Griffin cloth was developed for camouflage, a flexible, fabric-like surface which could display in real time the video feed of objects on the other side, making an object properly equipped with griffin cloth invisible. A tent of griffin cloth need not blemish the landscape, and a cop in griffin cloth need not fear being shot on the approach. But these wondersmiths would not leave it at that. Utopian coats are dream visions, created by covering a long trench coat with griffin cloth and programming the computer to process the real image before projecting it, substituting gold for gray, marble for brick, fish for birds, whatever the utopian imagines. Of the pair who stood before me in the alley, one's coat showed a city of tomorrow built in space, so the palace behind us floated in a star sea. The plants fitted with oxygen collectors, and the cars with solar sails like flying fish. The other coat showed the palace as a ruin, overgrown by swamp, the same stones aged 1,000 years, with fantastic creatures sunning themselves on the wreck, like dragons of the Middle Ages. The oddest pieces of 12 beasts assembled into one furred, scaled, and feathered alien. The coats are not mere games, nor decoration, like the Mitsubishi cloth which blooms and fades with the aesthetic progress of the seasons. Utopia means nowhere. So all utopians drape themselves in their most precious nowheres. Thank you for letting them go peacefully. I nodded toward the retreating drunks. The coat of ruins shrugged. We're used to it. You may not believe me, but I wept. The Anonymous calls these crimes of stupidity. People drunk on rage, power, or chemicals, who realize when sober just how much their fleeting folly threw away. I think of them more as crimes of the stifled predator. For nature built her greatest ape to hunt as well as gather. And if a zoo lion goes mad eating only vat-grown steak, then so can you. Servicers are common targets. That I can forgive. Even when the victims are young friends who crawl back to the dorms and spend nights shaking in my arms, I can forgive, for servicers are guilty. What penance, though, must this tainted world perform to purge this instinct to attack utopians, whose only crime is thinking too much of tomorrow? We heard you were here, Mycroft. Which Alpha called you? Though the voice was brave, the speaker drew her coat of stars tightly about herself, and even the digital blackness could not hide her shivers. Her name is Aldrin Bester, a fine utopian name, lifted from their canon, as in the olden days Europe took its names from lists of saints. The Duke de la Tremouille called me, I answered, lapsing in my distraction from Ganymede's public name to his proper one, which few non-Frenchmen use. The 6 hive leaders are all at the party. What shall I inform of your arrival? We're not here for the Alphas. We're here for you. The second utopian in his coat of ruins was taller than Aldrin, his short hair French brown to her eastern black. He bears the honorable name Voltaire Selden. The patriarch deserves to be honored for 100 reasons, but he owes his elevation to the utopian canon to the novella Micromégas, which makes him a candidate for the title of world's first science fiction author. Martin called us about these break-ins, Black Sakura and Sanir Weeksbooth. We have questions, and I expect you to use none of the glamours you use on Centrix. No deceptions, I promised, translating their utopian slang. Never with you. Voltaire's face switched for a moment from the sternness of business to a more personal sternness. Have you been using your days well, Mycroft? I've been trying. Chair Kosala has me drafting a proposal for improving the servicer program, and the Emperor had me teach a private seminar for their lictors on the history of violence. Are you writing? I looked at my feet. I haven't had time. I've had a lot of assignments lately, and I'm only allowed anti-sleeps twice a week. Voltaire frowned. Those are common excuses. You don't get to use common excuses. I know. I'm sorry. I'll do more. Do less, Aldrin cut in. I know you. You're filling your hours with nano-charities and calling it productivity. Do less and you'll output more. Yes, I confessed. You're right. I'll do better. Good. The illusion of her eyes seemed sad, but even I cannot trust the expressions on a utopian's transparent-seeming visor. The lenses the rest of us wear display our track of data perfectly, so in theory there is no need for the heavy visors utopians prefer, which cover the face from brows to cheekbones so their eyes never see true sun. Rumor insists that utopians only wear the visors to deceive us. The griffin cloth surfaces make them seem transparent, so projected eyes meet ours, and seem to smile and squint as real eyes do. But if the coats can transform day to night or earth to stars, surely the visors can replace their true expressions with what they want us to see. Shall we move inside? I gestured to the door behind me. There's an empty storeroom nearby. I let them enter first, so I, selfish creature, could delight in the coats which filled the hall before me with their fantasies. In Voltaire's Nowhere, the palace walls teemed with cracks, and the cracks with tiny lizard ants whose micro-civilization assembled the crumbs of marble into knee-high palaces. In Aldrin's Nowhere, the floor became a shimmering force field between us and empty space, on whose translucence I could see Voltaire striding beyond her, fitted with a spacesuit, solar panels folded at his sides like veil light wings. Aldrin began the interrogation. Martin told us what you said about the trace shifter artifact. I sighed my gratitude that one hive, at least, did not say canner device. I haven't had a chance yet to start tracking down the people I bought the packaging from. The censor needed me today. Were they Japanese by nation strat? The question made me frown. I believe so. We spoke Japanese, but these were underground meetings. No one wore insignia. Aldrin nodded. We scanned the tracker records from the hours around this theft. The artifact's hex left afterpaths. We are beginning to map its movement. It makes tracker IDs jump from victim to victim as people pass close by each other. So yours might jump to mine, then mine to Voltaire's, Voltaire's to another, bumping signal after signal, sometimes swapping back when people cross paths a second time, folding back on itself to make the threads harder to trace. The wielder can cast the hex kilometers from the target, then wait for the desired signal to drift out on the tide of exchanges. The effect entered the Sinir Weeksbooth Bosch house on a guest of Thisbe Sinir, then swapped the signals of everyone in the Bosch several times over, and Occam's signal traveled out on Cato Weeksbooth. From there it was easy enough for the caster to acquire it. We are still combing the records to see how many trackers were affected. Hundreds. I nodded. And anyone affected is a suspect. No, anyone near anyone who is near anyone affected. More, Aldrin corrected. We found this chain by examining Occam's Sinir. But if the caster also trace-shifted themselves separately, that will take us much more time to track. The chain we found is just the mask. Until we trace the effects more completely, no one on Earth has a true alibi, nor anyone in orbit. Cielo de Pajaros is close to the Esmeralda's elevator. Voltaire nodded, the visor showing me grim eyes. Meanwhile, we must hunt by motive, Mycroft. What motive do you smell? I flinched. There are too many. You told Martin that you believe occult powers within the Japanese Mitsubishi forged this artifact? I have no proof. You have instincts. Voice them. I took a deep breath. I think it was the Japanese Mitsubishi block originally. After news of the theft broke, when I was hunting for the thieves, everything I found, everyone involved, makers, smugglers, whatever the continent, they were always Japanese. It's hard to believe a criminal group wealthy enough to develop something so expensive would be that homogeneous. And it didn't seem like something a criminal group would want to put together anyway. Why spend so much on research and development when you have veteran killers who drop their trackers for hits all the time? Not criminals, then, Aldrin confirmed. But why would the Mitsubishi block forge such a super prosthesis? I smiled at her you-speak. Super prosthesis. So much more precise than tool for describing this thing designed to grant humans a superhuman skill. I don't know. The effect you describe, it's overkill for breaking into Black Sakura. That doesn't require juggling hundreds of trackers, it requires a good crowbar. Whoever did this wants us to be looking for the device, wants the panic and the witch hunt back. A pawing at the door made me jump, but it was only Aldrin's black unicorn which had followed us up the hallway. It is strange calling it normal, watching this unicorn, as sprightly as a lamb and sleek as shadow, scamper to its partner's side. But with utopians among us, such happy wonders are common. It is easy, if you look it up, to learn which types of U-beasts are robots and which biological. But most of us prefer not to research how these fantastic pets are made. So, when we see a utopian pass by with a miniature pterodactyl on his shoulders, or a gold-plumed griffin trotting at her heels, uncertainty lets us imagine that the wonder might, like Bridger's Boo, be real. Aldrin offered her U-beast a welcoming stroke, then turned to me. Why did you seek the trace shifter artifact in the first place?
Did Martin not tell you?
We know what illusion you cast with the packaging, but why? Your work was done. You had no further need for deception. Lies rose by instinct in my throat. I fought them back. I didn't want my real methods exposed. I didn't expect to use them again myself, but I didn't want that door closed for others. Shame kept me from glancing up, for fear of the disapproval in their projected eyes. And also, I figured that if I had the packaging, whoever was responsible for the device would assume that more investigation might link my crimes to them. They'd have an incentive to hurry the trial along, and my methods would never be fully investigated. I dared to peek now at the pair. They seemed to gaze on one another through their visors, silenced by the darkness of their thoughts. Visor. Why is visor not spelled with a Z, reader? Surely an object so associated with futurism should contain one of the futurist letters, Z or X. It feels right to say visor, not visor. Laser, not laser. And did someone block the investigation of your methods?
Yes.
Director Ando? Voltaire leaned forward so I could see Aldrin through his coat for a moment, a winged, frog-like creature whose arteries glowed through its transparent flesh like streams of fireflies.
Yes.
The word caught in my throat. But Ando didn't order the creation of the device, I'm sure of that. My impression is that they were furious when they found out it existed. Their involvement has been damage control, trying to conceal the bad choices of predecessors and subordinates. If you place the device in Ando's hand right now, they would destroy it. As I answered, Aldrin had her unicorn extend a wing-like screen and began skimming through its data. Do you know the artifact's original purpose? Was it forged for one specific end?
I don't know.
Visors exchanged digital glances. Does Ando know?
I don't know if Ando knows. And I don't know if whoever is using the device now knows either.
I think the thief wants to topple Ando. Whatever the device was for, it's easy to make it seem like it was designed for theft and murder. If the Japanese strat seems to be responsible for my crimes, if they seem to have been plotting to use this device for some kind of espionage, it would drive them out of power in the Mitsubishi for a generation. More. And if Ando and Danae go down, they'll drag Ganymede with them. Aldrin flipped through more data on the wing screen. Do you know why the thief involved the Sanir Weeksboothbash? Bridger's face, white with terror in my imagination, made me freeze. I did not want to lie to them, reader. Not to Utopia. I did not want to lie, but for what hides in that one house, I was prepared to force myself. It took some breaths for me to realize that no lies were needed. I have no idea. I can't think of anything to connect that Bash to Black Sakura, or the Gaiji's device, or internal Mitsubishi politics in any way. What I do know is that we need to protect that Bosch house more than anywhere on earth. Martin, I trust. Martin is gentle. But now the public knows one half of what's happened. If they find out the other half, and the public screams for a big, showy investigation of the Sanir Weeksbooth Bash, it will... I can't overstate how much it could disrupt. I paused. The numbers in the censor's sanctum rose blood-red in my mind. 33-67, 67-33, 29-71. Should I break confidence? Commit the well-intentioned treason of leaking from that most inviolate of Romanova's offices? Or could I make my fears clear without treason? There are elements of this which align with predictions made by members of the Mardi Bash. Digital eyes showed neither warmth nor judgment. What do you see in that? I don't know, I answered. Disrupting the cars hurts everyone. I can't even say it hurts the humanists and Mitsubishi most, because the Masons and Cousins have more members, so use the system that much more. The only... I choked. The only hive it doesn't hurt is you. They stared at me, both of them exchanging silent data behind their visors, though whether with one another or with distant members of their constellation, I could not say. They were the only ones immune. They, aloof in their separate transit system, had no interest in the Bash which pumped the lifeblood of six hives through Earth's broad skies, six but not seven. I told you, reader, that Utopia does not give up on dreams. When a Utopian dies of anything, the cause is marked and not forgotten until solved. A fall? They rebuild the site to make it safe. A criminal? They do not rest until he is rendered harmless. An illness? It is researched until cured, regardless of the time, the cost, over generations, if need be. A car crash? They create their separate system, slower, less efficient, costing hours, but which has never cost a single life. Even for suicide, they track the cause, and so patiently, blade by blade, disarm death. Death, of course, has many weapons, and if they have deprived him of 100 million, he still has enough at hand to keep them mortal. For now. You really thought it was us, didn't you? The itch of a tear on my cheek made me realize for the first time that, yes, I had thought it was them. Feared it was them, deep down inside, where thoughts aren't words yet. Relief's catharsis washed over me. It wasn't them. It was some viper from the familiar pit putting its fangs to use. Even if a constellation takes a viper's shape to brave the pit, the starlight holds no venom. Aldrin had her U-beast stow its screen. We've set watch over the tracker system. When the next hex is cast, we will know, almost instantly, and send in Romanova. The second strike will be the last. I laughed inside. Next, they will deprive death of the Canner device. I was right 13 years ago not to even try to buy the real thing. The packaging could deceive long term, but if I had used the device itself, Utopia in anger would have had me on the second day. It isn't only the Utopians who become a little more immortal with every blade they take away. It isn't only they who delight in seeing unicorns and wing rays in the street, who gaze through griffin cloth into enchanting nowheres, and ride their shuttles to the brave, bare moon, which their efforts make a little less bare every day. We all enjoy these wonders. All of us. Reader, you should not have barred Apollo Mojave from the Pantheon. Chapter the 14th. The interlude of the interview with retired Black Sakura reporter Tsunio Sugiyama, as related by Martin Guildbreaker. Mycroft Canner asked me to relate this interview, since they were at President Ganymede's party at the time and did not witness it. Mycroft is very worried that, after having a different guide for one chapter, the reader will be unwilling to trust a criminal again. So they asked me to state clearly from the start, I will author only this chapter. And afterward, Mycroft will carry on. Mycroft insists that I introduce myself, my bash, and family first, in accordance with period custom. Though I note that Mycroft broke that rule himself. My birth name is Mycroft Guildbreaker. I do not know why the Porphyrogene, J.E.D.D. Mason, during his sixth year, began to call me Martin, but I have now been known by that nickname for 15 years. I am 32 years old, born July 2nd, 2422. The Confraterne Domitor Bash, in English, Guildbreaker, is an hereditary bash, founded in 2177 and unbroken since. My biological parents are Minister Charlemagne Guildbreaker, Jr., and August Guildbreaker, currently Romanovan Praetor for the Masonic Hive, and formerly personal secretary to Emperor Aeneas Mason. Mycroft wanted to use Empress for female Masons, but I find Mycroft's gendered language disruptive, and have restored the customary Emperor, both in this chapter and Mycroft's earlier discussion of Agrippa Mason. Both my parents are descended from previous emperors or their bossibs, one from Tiber Mason, and the other from a sibling of Antonine Mason. While the other 7 Bapas in my birth bash are third-generation Masons at the least. I took the adulthood competency exam in my 15th year, immediately became a familiaris of the Emperor, undertook my Annus Dialogorum, and on its completion became, on the same day, Mason, a nepos of the Emperor, and minister to the Porphyrogene, child of the Emperor, who was then 4 years of age. I studied at the August Polylegal College of the Alexandrian campus, graduating at 25, and have thus far held all the offices of the Cursus Honorum at the expected ages. The new generation of my bash was formalized when I was 20, and contains 7 members, including 4 Bossibs born to the Guildbreaker name, and 3 friends from the Alexandrian campus. One of them, from a Chinese Mitsubishi bash, became my spouse, now Shaolyo Guildbreaker, a familiaris, counsel to the Emperor, and proud to be the first person not raised in a Masonic bash to have joined the Guildbreaker bash in 4 generations. We have 3 children, Aeneas, Lissa, and An, and 4 other bar kids born of our 4 bashmates, though I confess myself something of a stranger to most of them since I am a vocateur, and my duties to the young Porphyrogene mean that I spend more hours in their bash than in my own. Though it is illegal to speculate about such things, I know I have been widely discussed as a potential successor to the current emperor. I place no stock in such rumors. A dissatisfied Mycroft now insists that I append something more vivid about myself, a scene or anecdote to enliven this list of flat facts. If there is a keystone event of my fortunes, it was the night in my 14th year when I exchanged my first adult words with my emperor. I was waiting for my bapas in a small courtyard garden in the imperial palace. I was not aware at the time, but it was a grim day for Cornell Mason, since familiaris Calavine Acton had just confessed to the Amador treason, so Caesar was considering the first exercise of their capital power. This is also why my bapas were at the palace well past midnight. I remember a little fountain which was partly clogged, so that a faint spray shot sideways onto a bench. The damp of the stone felt good as I sat, though I was cold, because it made me very aware of my body. I did not notice the emperor until they spoke. "What can a child of your age have to think about that makes you look so much more serious than I myself?" I remember looking up that Mason was at first just an immense dark shape, like a pillar merging the black of the earth with the black of the sky. But as I watched, the spraying water made glints of light spread along their suit, as if the stars and city lights of the capital were mingling and multiplying in the new space offered by this living being. Caesar's words I remember verbatim, but my own stumbling responses I do not. I answered that I was trying to decide when to undertake my Annus de Legorum. I have no doubt that the custom will outlast these words, but to please Mycroft I will explain. When an aspiring mason has passed the adulthood competency exam and completed the initial courses in Masonic law and government, the initiate is clothed for a year in a suit of pure white and undertakes the year of debate, engaging a different person each day in discussion of what it means to be a mason. After 366 debates, if the initiate still wishes to join the empire, there is no further test. If you have doubt about becoming a mason, Mason answered, the Annus de Legorum will settle it. I approximate my answer. That isn't it, Caesar. There's no doubt I will be a mason. I can't wait to start speaking Latin and using an understanding power and serving you, but I know I'm very young. If I do my Annus de Legorum now, I'll understand less than if I wait until I'm older, and learn less from it about what it really means to be a mason. I want to be a mason now, but I don't want to waste the Annus, since I only get to do it once. Mason's next words were not to me, but to an aide, commanding that my bapas be summoned to witness my investiture as an imperial nepos. That very night, I will not say in my honor, Cornell Mason created the Ordo Vitae de Legorum, the Order of the Life of Debate. Membership is open to all Masons, and marked by one white sleeve, a permanent invitation to engage the wearer in debate over the Masonic life, not for a year, but lifelong. I wear it proudly. That night, too, the title of Familiaris was promised to me upon my passing the adulthood competency exam, since, by alliance law, a minor may not subject themselves to Caesar's force. I had long desired, even expected, these honors, but each in their course as I earned them, not all in one breath. I asked Caesar in some bewilderment why they granted me so much so quickly. This was my true investiture. I have use for you. You will be my instrument, my touch, my voice, my proxy while my work keeps me away. The one Masonic influence to counter all the others. You will teach and guide my son. That night, I met the Porphyrogene. The first stage of my investigation of the Black Sakura and Sania Weeksbooth double break-in has already been related. At 1757 Universal Time, on March 24th, 2454, I requested permission to interview Tsunio Sugiyama, preferring to conduct the interview in person rather than over the tracker system. I was invited to the Sugiyama residence outside Kanazawa in the Ishikawa prefecture of Chubu and arrived at 1931 Universal Time. The Sugiyama Bash House is a compact townhouse, three stories, pressed tightly on both sides by similar houses. Tsunio Sugiyama is 89 years old, female, 162 centimeters tall, dark brown eyes, short grayish-white hair, with distinctly yellowed front teeth. No other distinguishing marks. Sugiyama wore a Japanese-cut Mitsubishi suit, green, with a spring pattern of morning glories climbing bamboo. Eight strat insignia were visible. On the right wrist, a Japanese Nation Strat bracelet and Lune Casserer fan club bracelet. On the jacket front, a Journalists Guild clip and Gazetteer Gaming Club pin. On the shoes, skiers buckles. On the front pocket, a Shiba Inu dog breeder's patch and an Ishikawa region patch. On the left ring finger, a Nagoya campus ring. And on the right little finger, a great books club ring. Sugiyama offered me tea, and I accepted. I commenced formal interview at 1937 Universal Time. The following is a verbatim transcript, interspersed with my interpretive comments. Sugiyama seemed unusually relaxed at the beginning of the interview, though not in a joking or jovial way. I did not understand the reason until later on. Guildbreaker. Thank you for seeing me, Mitsubishi Sugiyama. You are aware this is being recorded? Sugiyama. Of course, Mason. Of course. Guildbreaker. This is just an initial interview. There may be more detailed sessions later, once I've had a chance to act on your initial statement. Sugiyama. I know how interviews work, youngster. Guildbreaker. And you know I represent a polyhive investigation? If you report anything here which is pertinent to the security of a non-Mitsubishi, I'm legally obligated to inform the praetors of the affected hive, or the tribune's officers in the case of hivelifts. Sugiyama. I knew outside police would come. It doesn't make sense for this to be handled among us. Guildbreaker. I am not police. I am a polylegal investigator. My team is handling the initial stages of this, since it affects all seven hives at sensitive levels, so they want it handled delicately. Once we've secured the safety of the essential parties, the police will apprehend the actual offender. Sugiyama. You're using utopians for the grunt work, aren't you? I know how it works. I covered the Mycroft Canner case as well. Guildbreaker. First, for the record, is it correct that you are not the author of the 710 list which was stolen from Black Sakura 2 days ago and subsequently recovered by the police? Sugiyama. That's correct. But no one outside Black Sakura knew I wasn't writing it this year. 710 lists are only popular when they're written by big names, and with Black Sakura being only the second most important Mitsubishi paper, the Hagiwara-san knew our readership outside the hive would fizzle if the public found out I wasn't the author. That doesn't excuse them trying to pass off Masumi Kun's work as mine, but I understand why they did it. Guildbreaker. How long have you worked at Black Sakura? Sugiyama. I first worked for them from 2382 to 86, then did graduate school from 86 to 90, worked at Black Sakura again until 2411, freelance from 11 to 25, then took 9 years off to write my books, started again at Black Sakura full-time in 34, and retired last week. That last run was 19 years, 9 months, 11 days all told. Sugiyama answered this question with a speed which indicated that they had prepared their answers ahead of time. My flight to Chubu had taken 46 minutes, and they had clearly spent that time preparing. Having worked so long as a reporter, Sugiyama was experienced with interviews, so it was safe to assume that if they chose to lie to me, I would have no way to detect it. Guildbreaker. You retired last week? Sugiyama. Unofficially. A lot of people invest in the paper, counting on me as a draw, so we decided it was best to wait and announce at the end of the quarter when the contracts expire. Guildbreaker. Was this a planned retirement, or... Sugiyama. Oh, it was sudden. I know doctors keep telling me I have another 50 years left in me, but after 72 years as a journalist, Volker, I decided it was time to pay more attention to family. Knowing me, I probably won't be able to keep myself entirely retired very long, but it's a plan for now. Guildbreaker. How far ahead had you planned this? Sugiyama. It wasn't planned at all. Totally sudden. Guildbreaker. What was the cause? Sugiyama. My grandchild, Aki, tried to kill himself. Guildbreaker. I'm sorry to hear it. Do you know why? Sugiyama. Aki's lover killed himself. You see, Aki is already 21, and had been living in a campus 7 years, but hadn't really gotten close enough to anyone to think about forming a bash, except this one lover, a bright young Irish brillist named Matisse O'Byrne. Had a marvelous voice, that kid, but a bit unstable, into Gore photos and Canner Beat, but lots of potential. They were very close. Aki wanted the two of them to come join and continue my bash, rather than forming a new one, since Aki's always been close to me and my bash mates. But Matisse wanted to stay in the campus longer to see if they could find some others of their generation to make a new bash. Guildbreaker. How did Matisse die? Sugiyama. Car crash? Guildbreaker. A car crash? Sugiyama. Yes. The one over Mexico City 9 days ago. You must have read about it. Guildbreaker. Yes. I do not jump to conclusions. Neither do I ignore data when it appears before me. Yes, murder entered my mind as a rational possibility. No, I did not have any special intuition of something sinister beyond the facts. I did note to myself that Sugiyama could not know where the stolen list had been found, so they had no reason to share my suspicions. Sugiyama. It was Matisse's own fault, the experts say. There's this kit you can get, apparently, that makes the cars crash, scrambles the system. A thrill-ride suicide kit, it's called. It's illegal in most hives to sell something like that, but humanists will insist on these things being art for art's sake, whatever the buyer does with them. Guildbreaker. Then you believe the crash was suicide? Sugiyama. Like I said, Matisse was unstable. Even attempted suicide once before. Matisse called Aki and talked to them over the tracker in the final minute when the car was flying out of control. Horrible, morbid stuff about death and eternity. Guildbreaker. Did Matisse specifically say it was suicide? Sugiyama. You can get the recording from the cops. I don't want to listen to it. Aki tried to jump off a building themselves after that, and made another attempt at home the day after, but they finally calmed down. I'm past being pissed at poor Matisse. The kid obviously needed help, but almost losing Aki made me think about how little time I'd spent with them, or with my bar kids and bash mates, since I've always been a voker. Guildbreaker. So you decided to retire? Sugiyama. That's right. Maybe I'll write another book. But for now, I've spent all week with Aki and my bash mates, and some from Aki's birth bash, just relaxing. Feels pretty right. I'm still going to do editorials now and again, but no more vokering for me. You're a voker too, aren't you, youngster? Guildbreaker. Yes. Sugiyama. Ever calculate what portion of your time you spend with the people you care most about? Guildbreaker. My bash are all vokers. Sugiyama. Ha! No hope for you, then. I consider the possibility that the tangent might be intentional evasion, and cut it off. Guildbreaker. What about the 710 list? You were supposed to write it. Sugiyama. Yes, I was beginning the editorials when all this happened. My assistant offered to finish the editorials for me and publish the original list, but I don't like to do things halfway. Guildbreaker. Your assistant, that is Masumi Mitsubishi? Sugiyama. Yes. Brilliant kid. Memory like an elephant and a razor sense of humor. I can see what Ando saw in them. But I told Masumi-kun, if they were going to write the list, they should do it themselves. Their own list, start to finish. They're young, and it's good to have young ideas out there sometimes. I told Hagiwara-san that Masumi-kun's status as a member of the Ando Mitsubishi Bash would be a draw in itself. But do editors listen? Guildbreaker. Had Masumi known who was on your list? Sugiyama. Only the three outsider names. Masumi-kun set up the interviews for me. Most of the staff at Black Sakura can usually guess who my bottom three will be, since they know who I have been interviewing lately.
But I never show anyone the order of the Big Seven. Guildbreaker. Did you write it down? Sugiyama. Of course. I had a paper copy and shorthand, and half-finished essays on most of the 10 started on my computer. I know what you're thinking. Masumi could have accessed my computer. And it's true, they could have. So could anyone around the office. Thing is, I've seen a copy of Masumi's list now. And there's no way Masumi could come up with that after seeing mine. You know how you can tell if an artist has studied another, even if they don't copy it directly? Guildbreaker. Do you have the original list here? Sugiyama. I knew you'd ask. I've written a translation for you. Guildbreaker. Thank you. But I will also want to examine the original paper list for fingerprints and other signs of tampering. Sugiyama. Of course, of course. Just read my translation first. I read the list at this time. It was on the same type of paper as that recovered by Mycroft, but written in a very unsteady English hand. I was unable to keep my hands from shaking as I read. I do not have, nor do I believe in, powers that can sense import in things beyond what reason and the facts supply, but I do believe that some minds, appropriately specialized, may get a true sense of a thing at first glance, even before the conscious mind translates the details into thoughts. Surely President Ganymede, presented with a painting, knows its period, school, and quality before becoming conscious of the brushstrokes, pigment, and stylistic traits which are the grounds for their deduction. Princess Danae Mitsubishi, though not as fluent in art as the president, is experienced enough at least to recognize the school. As Princess Mitsubishi is with art, so am I far from the foremost expert at solving crimes. But even on first reading of the list, I know that I held motive in my hands. Number 1, Cornell Mason. Number 2, Anonymous. Number 3, Sniper. Number 4, Zeven Racer. Number 5, Briar Kosala. Number 6, Felix Faust. Number 7, Hotaka Andu Mitsubishi. Number 8, François Quenet. Number 9, Julia Doria Pamphili. Number 10, Lorelei Cookie Cook. Guildbreaker. This is Sniper instead of the President? And Racer instead of Perry? Sugiyama. I wanted to stir things up a bit. Guildbreaker. Masumi Mitsubishi knew about this? Sugiyama. Masumi knew I'd been interviewing Racer, Julia, and Cookie. But I'm sure they assumed those three would be 8, 9, and 10. In fact, I went so far as to start a fake editorial about Ganymede so anyone glancing through my files would think my list was normal. Leaks are rare, but they do happen. And I didn't want anything to spoil the surprise. Bookies don't even take bets about outsiders making it into the top 7. Guildbreaker. Did Sniper know? Sugiyama. No. Every paper interviews Sniper twice a week. What's one more? Guildbreaker. Racer, I understand, but why, if I may ask? Sugiyama. Everybody knows Ganymede only had the margin they did last election because Sniper endorsed them. If Sniper didn't always publicly decline office, they'd be vice president or even co-consul by now. Guildbreaker. So you say Sniper is the most important humanist because they let President Ganymede win? Sugiyama. Not just that. They meet a lot, Ganymede and Sniper. Behind closed doors. Sniper's careful never to admit anything, but no one would hand someone the presidency without a big price tag attached. Why share power as co-consuls when you can blackmail Ganymede and not have to go to any boring meetings? I've met Sniper hundreds of times, so I know something of how the kid thinks. Guildbreaker. And Hotaka Andu Mitsubishi you ranked below even Felix Faust? Sugiyama. When I have time, I'll write summaries of my unfinished editorials for you. unless you have someone on your staff who reads Japanese.
Guildbreaker, I do.
Sugiyama,
of course.
Tycoon.
Note, Sugiyama means J.E.D.D. Mason, whose Japanese nickname, I understand, has something to do with being a young man crowned or near a crown.
Guildbreaker.
You realized when you wrote this that it would be quite a blow for Director Mitsubishi to be ranked so low by their native paper?
Sugiyama.
Nothing like a good kick in the balls to get people going. You may not be aware, but I've been watching my hive 80 years now. Things are bad. We've been letting ourselves shrink too long. It isn't good for us sitting like lumps watching the masons grow. But it's not only my own hive I'm kicking. There's wallop enough for the humanists, and for Europe. All three need it, the cousins too. My draft editorials will make it clearer. I was sad when I quit that they wouldn't be published, but you've got to hand the reins to the new generation sometime. Masumi-kun has some pretty stimulating names on their list too, Darcy Sock, and Crown Prince Leonor especially. Give the kid a year or two and they'll be better than I was. Well, as good, maybe. I asked Mycroft what I should read of the pattern of honorifics sometimes present and sometimes absent in Sugiyama's English. Mycroft was unhelpful.
Guildbreaker, would you be willing to let me schedule you for an enhanced memory session to recall in detail the activity at the Black Sakura offices in the week before the theft?
Sugiyama, I don't like utopians pumping chemicals into my brain.
Guildbreaker,
it could be vital.
Sugiyama, I still don't like it.
Guildbreaker, the alternative is for me to send a professional police interviewer, which would take much longer. I've endured both myself, and I dislike drugs, but I vastly prefer the EMS.
Sugiyama,
I'll think about it.
Guildbreaker,
time is a factor.
Sugiyama,
I'll need at least 1 minute to think.
Guildbreaker,
of course. Are you familiar with how an EMS works?
Do you want to hear about the side effects?
Sugiyama, I've done them before, I just don't like it.
Guildbreaker,
I must also ask you to speculate about who else might have seen your list.
Sugiyama,
you're sure it leaked, aren't you?
Guildbreaker,
the theft seems to be engineered to bring your list before the public eye.
Sugiyama,
my thought as well. Someone at Black Sakura who saw my list and couldn't bear not to let the public see it.
Guildbreaker,
or was bribed by one of the hives that would benefit.
Sugiyama,
you don't know us at all, do you? Black Sakura isn't a normal paper like Le Monde or Shanghai Daily. It's staffed entirely by Vokers. Not just Vokers, but total Japanese Mitsubishi culture-obsessed literary zealots. It's not unusual for them to spend a week in the office without sleeping, most of them hardly seeing their bosses. And I don't know a one of them who manages to spend their whole salary since they don't really do anything but work. Most of them wouldn't know what to do with a bribe if you offered it to them, and a lot of them would probably physically attack anyone who suggested intentionally tampering with the press. There's always the possibility of an outsider sneaking into the office, but if one of Black Sakura did it, it was because they wanted the public to see my last great work, not for money or power.
Guildbreaker,
what about this assistant editor who went public about the theft and substitution, Hikaru Nakahara?
Sugiyama,
journalistic conscience, not bribery. If I know Nakahara-san, they probably spent a long night deciding whether to go public or hand in their resignation. Well, there will have been some ambition in it. When Hagiwara-san resigns, Nakahara-san will probably take over, and readership will skyrocket with all this fuss. If scary criminals think we're important enough to burgle... The Porphyrogene's voice spoke on my tracker.
Imprimantur.
Translation, let them be printed. I held out my hand to silence Sugiyama, who could not hear the new voice over my tracker, but was startled seeing me sit so abruptly straight. Others always tell me they could not bear to live with a tracker connection set on permanent priority, so the person on the other end may hear and see through mine at any time without my knowledge, and speak to me suddenly without any warning beep or me having to select take call. After 17 years of the privilege, never facing any scene alone, nor enduring a second's delay before the porphyrogene's words reach me, I could not bear to live without it. Guildbreaker. Quai? What? Porphyrogene. Indices, collegis auctoribus petiturus est ut indices perendie cum alienus pel vulgare liceat, nihil obstat. The lists. At the urging of Sugiyama's colleagues, it has been petitioned that they be allowed to be disseminated with the others the day after tomorrow. Let nothing prevent it. Sugiyama. What's happening? Guildbreaker. I am to tell you that there is no legal obstruction to prevent Black Sakura from publishing the two lists, yours and Masami Mitsubishi's, when the other papers release theirs on the day after tomorrow. Sugiyama. I was about to ask that. Guildbreaker. Yes, they knew you were. Sugiyama. Is that Taiken on the line? Guildbreaker. Yes. Sugiyama. Taiken themself? Quite the honor for my little mystery. Has Taiken met with Director Ando about this yet? Has the directorate approved the publication of the lists? Porphyrogene, in English, repeated verbatim by Guildbreaker. The directorate has no right to silence words. Only the author does. This theft tells us that some specter wants your list in the world's eye. We know not why. By publishing, you blindly serve that specter. But you also serve truth, and relieve the curiosity pain of frightened humanity. You must choose. But if within these 2 days we can name the specter, you will choose less blindly. Sugiyama. You're right. Call your utopians. Let's get this EMS over with. Guildbreaker. You'll do it? Sugiyama. If it might help, yes. Your Taiken's right. The public needs to see what this is all about. But something's rotten here. And someone's trying to use me and use my paper. The only way to stop them is for you to find out what they're after. Guildbreaker. Thank you. We appreciate your help. Sugiyama. Good. I wouldn't do an EMS for just anyone. Porphyrogene, repeated by Guildbreaker. No. You do it for truth and charity. Your choice is kind. I thank you. Here ends the second day of this history. Chapter the 15th. If They Catch Me. I see Martin has introduced the word murder into our tale. Technology has eliminated that middle breed of criminal who thinks that if they wash their hands and dump the body far from home, they can get away with it. Criminals now are either self-labeled geniuses who, through elaborate preparation, think they can outwit the tracker's DNA and all the practice and experience of law, or else they are plain men with no delusions of escaping punishment. Of every 5 killers now, 3 turn themselves in right away, having acted in the grip of rage, or else in the calm confidence that the deed was worth the price. 1 out of 5 escapes by suicide. Only the last of the 5 attempts to hide, having schemed and toiled for months to form the perfect plan. He fails. There are professionals, of course, for the mob will always need its violence, but they too know that someday they must either flee the alliance entirely, living out their lives in trackless hiding, or else be caught.
Gone are the days when the police would gather evidence, conduct their interviews over a few days, and in the end discover the boyfriend, ex-wife, or business rival who had seen the opportunity and seized it. I asked Commissioner General Papadelius once which he preferred, the would-be